Good morning, and welcome to the N.C. Warren press call on combined heat and power. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Jim Warren. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good morning, and thanks for joining our press teleconference. My name is Jim Warren. I'm Executive Director of N.C. Warren. We're a watchdog group based in Durham, North Carolina. We've been around about 25 years. Our top priority for the past decade has been climate change and bringing the clean energy revolution to North Carolina and the Southeast. Today's call regards an initiative N.C. Warren is making to urge state utilities regulators to help put wasted energy to work instead of building large power plants. Many of you know that N.C. Warren has promoted cogeneration, now more often called combined heat and power, or CHP. We've promoted the technology in recent years at the Utilities Commission as one of several climate-protecting alternatives to the continued reliance on and construction of dirty and expensive power plants. We're really enthused because recent advances in this energy-saving technology could allow thousands of North Carolina facilities, such as schools, hospitals, and grocery stores, to save over 30% of their annual energy usage. And the energy savings could allow us to replace a number of large power plants. So N.C. Warren filed a report yesterday with state regulators as part of the long-range planning docket. We filed this report calling for hearings to determine how North Carolina can best expand the use of CHP. Our report is called Combined Heat and Power in North Carolina, Replacing Large Power Plants by Putting Wasted Energy to Work. You can find it now live at ncwarren.org, and I will refer you ahead of time to some helpful graphics, especially around page 6 and 7, that will help demystify this concept of combined heat and power. Today we're pleased to have with us an expert from the American Council for an Energy Efficiency Economy, or ACEEE, who will help explain the economic and environmental benefits of CHP, along with some of the barriers that have hindered its development in the Carolinas. Electricity generated by this resource is cheaper than that generated by conventional sources, and the energy it saves would dramatically reduce greenhouse emissions and other pollution while saving ratepayers billions of dollars by avoiding the risky construction of new power plants. So the real question for North Carolina is, with such enormous capacity for CHP here, how long will we keep wasting so much energy, and what will it take to really get this technology under full development? I'd like to introduce my co-worker, Anna Moorfield. She is the lead author of our new report. She is a paralegal and lead researcher at N.C. Warren, and I'm really pleased to be working with her on this project. Good morning, Anna.
Thanks, Jim. For those of you who aren't familiar, CHP technology combines the on-site processes of a facility's electricity generation and heating or cooling in order to allow facilities to use energy more efficiently by putting to work large amounts of thermal energy that would otherwise be wasted into the environment. Many facilities burn fuel on-site for heat or cooling. Others do so to generate electricity, and CHP combines the two, allowing the wasted energy from one process to fuel the other, boosting the efficiency of the facility as a whole. Facilities such as schools, colleges, hotels, grocery stores, prisons, health clubs, and manufacturing and industrial facilities are ideal for CHP. And usually CHP utilizes fossil fuels such as natural gas, or coal or biomass. And while NC Warren doesn't advocate most of these sources as clean fuels, the more efficient usage of these sources reduces greenhouse gases and other pollution. This technology is a decades-old technology that has been widely used and developed around the world. CHP is currently being heavily promoted on the national level by the U.S. Department of Energy and the EPA, and research by both of those organizations has prompted a executive order to be put in place by President Obama in August of 2012 that mandates 40 gigawatts of new CHP by 2020. That's the equivalent of about 40 large power plants. Most facilities are not aware of how much this technology has advanced in recent years. Installations as small as 50 kilowatts are now practical. And that means that the technology can also be priced to match and sized to match the facility that's interested in this energy efficiency technology. CHP is also very economical. System investments average about 4 to 7 years for a payback period. And for smaller systems with a very high demand can be as low as around 3 years. CHP-generated electricity also costs about approximately 6 cents per kilowatt hour, which is lower than a lot of what people pay from the grid in this state. The technical capacity that North Carolina has available to tap into for CHP is probably, given all system sizes, the equivalent of around 10 large power plants. Some North Carolina facilities have already pursued CHP. Those would include a handful of Food Lion stores throughout the state, the Johnson County Hospital, UNC Chapel Hill, and Fort Bragg. Still, North Carolina has barely scratched the surface of what it can achieve with this technology. Duke Energy has been granted guaranteed profits and monopoly protection across the Carolinas, a favor from state government which should require it to prioritize existing resources instead of risking billions of customer dollars on construction of new power plants. Duke Progress should follow the lead of other U.S. utilities across the country and encourage CHP develop instead of hinder it. Ways that they can pursue this is by installing and leasing systems to customers who are interested in CHP, or by launching utility and distributed CHP programs. All of these things would be a better bet than risking ratepayers' money and the environment on expensive new power plants.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna Moorfield. Again, she is a paralegal and lead researcher at NC Warren and the lead author of our new report on CHP. And again, you can find that at ncwarren.org. And as a reminder, there are some helpful diagrams there to show how this works, especially, let me also tell you, not part of the report, but we would be happy to send you a list of the facilities in North Carolina that are already using CHP technology. There are dozens of them, but as Anna Moorfield mentioned, we're really only scratching the surface for the overall potential here. I'd like to introduce Ms. Anna Cheatham. Really appreciate her joining us and helping out. She's a senior policy analyst at the American Council for an Energy Efficiency Economy. I almost started off by saying ACEEE because they have become so familiar to watchdog groups like ours around the country who are trying to push the clean energy revolution. And she's been really helpful in helping us understand the issues involving cogeneration or CHP and the latest developments, I do want to clarify the NC Warren report is something that we are responsible for, NC Warren, for the content. So if you find a mistake there, call me about it, not Anna Chittum. So she's been with ACEEE since 2008, and she specializes in CHP systems and industrial energy efficiency programs. So thank you very much for joining us, Anna.
Thank you. Good morning. Just a quick background as to why my organization, ACEEE, pays so much attention to CHP. We're a national nonprofit. We're headquartered in Washington, D.C. We've been around for 30 years, and much of that time we have viewed combined heat and power, or cogeneration as it has been called in other decades. We view combined heat and power as what Anna Moorfield indicated, a truly untapped efficiency resource. And it is an existing technology that has existed and been proven for decades. We, in general, promote energy efficiency, and we promote energy efficiency because it is always the least cost energy resource available in any given market. And combined heat and power is one of those is one of the aspects of very cost-effective energy efficiency resources. Combined heat and power also is very flexible, and it is very adaptable to a number of different applications. And so there are a number of different actual technologies that that the entire suite of combined heat and power comprises, and there are sort of engines that look very much like just enlarged car engines, and there are turbines that look a little bit more like the types of things you might see powering an actual airplane. Those are all can be combined heat and power, and combined heat and power can also run off of natural gas, biomass, biogas, and there are some oil and coal-powered combined heat and power projects in the U.S., but by and large, the new ones that are being built are taking advantage of a locally available and relatively inexpensive natural gas and biomass and biogas resources. So we have always viewed combined heat and power as a very good option for any sort of facility that is thinking long-term about their energy costs, because it gives them a lot of control. It's an on-site energy generation resource that concurrently meets their heating or cooling needs or their process steam needs. And so it gives an individual facility a lot more control over how they can meet their own in-house needs. Combined heat and power systems can also adapt throughout their lifespan to new fuel resources. There's a number of instances where we have seen combined heat and power projects that were initially built using oil, and they may have changed to adapt to biomass at some point along their lifespan as biomass became available. So it's really quite flexible. So one of the things that ACEEE pays a lot of attention to is the actual potential for combined heat and power in all 50 states and the existing policy frameworks in all 50 states, and whether or not they are encouraging or discouraging of combined heat and power. So we did dig into North Carolina in detail for some recent work, and we looked at the technical potential and the economic potential for combined heat and power just looking at existing facilities. So just saying, okay, of all of the existing facilities in North Carolina, which ones might be well suited to combined heat and power, perhaps because they have really high thermal energy needs, maybe they're an industrial facility that has a lot of use for steam, so a combined heat and power system could provide that, as well as providing electricity, for lights and other systems. We looked just at systems that were 1 megawatt and larger for our particular study, and this complements some of what Anna Moorfield said earlier. If you take into account some of the smaller systems, the technical potential, it would be bigger. But for the research that ACEEE did, looking just at potential for systems 1 megawatt and larger, we found about 6 megawatts of technical potential, which is equivalent to about 22% of the total installed electric generating capacity in North Carolina today. And then we looked at that potential and we said, okay, you know, this is the technical potential. This is what is technically feasible, what makes engineering sense, but, you know, what is the economic potential of that technical potential out there? And so to do that, we did some analysis looking at existing, you know, the price that these facilities would be paying for natural gas to power their CHP systems, the price of electricity that they're likely paying that they would be avoiding by generating their own electricity on their facility. And we came up with two economic cases. The first is what we called the base case, which is a very, very, very conservative case. And we say that this is a case that represents just a 50% acceptance of a two-year payback period, which is very conservative, but we kind of wanted to, you know, set the initial estimate quite low because we knew that this was something that, you know, would definitely be likely to be accepted by almost any facility, a two-year payback period. And so for the base case, we found a small potential, about 151 megawatts. And then we looked at a high case, which is a more aggressive case, and it considers, you know, what if there was a larger acceptance of longer payback periods? And we postulate that that could happen if utilities like Duke think about making either, you know, making these investments themselves or encouraging them through energy efficiency programming and offering, you know, technical assistance or, you know, perhaps help with leasing or acquiring low interest loans, those kinds of things, and that they would be, a utility is typically comfortable with making long-term investments. They make investments in centralized generation and they make investments in their wires, and they're, you know, they're looking at much longer payback periods than 2 years. So what we estimated for the high economic case was a 100% acceptance of a five-year payback period and a 50% acceptance of a 10-year payback period. And when we ran those numbers, we came up with a potential of about 1.3 gigawatts. And so, you know, one of the things that we can see here is that, you know, these potentials that I'm talking about are based on just existing economics, and they are based on the federal investment tax credit, but they aren't based on any other substantial incentives. And so this is, you know, if a state were to, say, prioritize combined heat and power and come up with other ways that a CHP system might be able to tap into revenue streams when it's installed, as other states have done, you know, there could be quite a few more systems that look to be economic in our potential assessment. So just quickly, I wanted to talk about kind of how ACEEE views the environment for combined heat and power in North Carolina. As I said, we pay attention to what the CHP policies and regulations are in all 50 states, and every year we issue a scorecard that ranks states on their energy efficiency policies, including combined heat and power. So last year, our scorecard ranked North Carolina as a 1.5 out of 5 possible points in the CHP category. So not very high. You know, North Carolina does have a very high investment tax credit that combined heat and power systems can take advantage of, which is wonderful. It's the highest in the country. It does, though, however, we have done some research interviewing combined heat and power developers and users around the country. North Carolina and states do have at least development or electricity rates when they find out that a facility is considering combined heat and power, and that can actually make.
Anna, you are breaking up. I'm not sure. Maybe you'll be able to get clear there. Let me, in the meantime, refer people to page 7 on the new report, if you have it in front of you, and if Anna Chittum is able to rejoin us, I'll get her to comment. But I think it really shows the power of this technology. This is Denmark, sort of a before and after look at what they've done. And I think I understood Anna Chittum to say now that Denmark doesn't even allow any power to be produced unless it's accompanied by CHP. But if you look at the before image, you see a relative handful of large central power stations. And if you look at the after image, you look at distributed or decentralized power that's not reliant on those giant central locations. And you see quite a lot of wind and other clean technologies there. So that really kind of captures what we're up against here. That was Anna Chittum, by the way, senior policy analyst at ACEEE, the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. So before we go to Q&A, just a couple of recap points. I mean, NC Warren's position is that developing combined heat and power in North Carolina is a key step towards stabilizing our climate and avoiding the staggering rate hikes that would be required to pay for new power plants that simply are not needed. And building new power plants is the path that Duke Energy, Progress Energy have mapped out for our energy future. And we are saying there's CHP is one of a number of clean technologies that can avoid going in that direction. So, Denise, we can open up for Q&A if you have some questions lined up.
Sure. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star, then 1 on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw from the queue, you may press star, then 2. And our first question will come from Housley Carr of Platts. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I was wondering, with the economics of CHP being pretty clear, what is holding companies back from doing this? Is there some sort of interference from the utilities and maybe concern on their part that if a big industrial or a community college did something like this, that it would reduce the amount of power that they buy from the utility?
That's sort of it in a nutshell, Mr.
Okay.
Carr. And there are several policies in place that have been there a long time that Duke Energy and Progress Energy have used that have been strong disincentives for customers to develop CHP in North Carolina. That gets into basically a penalty for customers that do develop CHP. It comes in the form of a standby rate that I won't get into the weeds of all that, but also they offer what are loosely called economic incentives to customers who are considering CHP that that helps dissuade them from going in that direction. So yeah, it comes down to competition for the energy generation. And what we are saying is there are, as you'll see in the report, a number of utilities around the country who are have created programs where they are benefiting from CHP, either by owning or leasing equipment and by maintaining equipment at customer locations. So this is back to what NC Warren is calling on the Utilities Commission here to convene a process to look at those barriers and to look at the cost benefits of going in the direction with more CHP, other energy efficiency programs, more solar, distributed solar, and more wind, and instead of this direction of building giant power plants and raising our rates year after year to make that happen. So, field another question.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. And we have a question from Bob Geary of The Independent. Please go ahead.
Jim, hey, do you have any indication from the Utilities Commission? Do they signal you that they're receptive to this kind of filing, or do you know? How do you find that out?
Well, that's a good question, and I can't speak for commissioners. Obviously, this is not something that's been discussed much at the commission, as far as I can recall. Again, we have been promoting CHP or cogeneration for the last several years as something that ought to be picked up and run with, but we have really here recently for the first time been able to really put some numbers, again, with excellent help mm-hmm. from ACEEE, and really look at the potential and the barriers. And so it's just really important now that the commission convene a process that will allow an open and careful examination of this at this, you know, crucial juncture of our energy and economic future.
And if I could follow up, is Duke or Progress do any of this at this point, or are they passive in this process?
My understanding, Anna Moorfield, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is they haven't even scratched on CHP or cogeneration.
Yeah, and in terms of actually investing in it themselves and taking the initiative that a lot of other utilities in other states have, they haven't. And in particular, I think Anna was speaking to this before she sort of dropped off. The economic development rates that Jim was speaking to, it's common for if a utility hears that a facility is interested in investing in CHP on their own accord, that the utility will step in and offer them a lower rate if it's a large industrial or manufacturing customer, so that it'll disincentivize them from saving energy, essentially, and from investing in that system. It makes that impractical for them. And while it might be good for that facility at that time, it is not good for them in the long run, and it's not good for the state as a whole in the long run either. So in a lot of degrees, Duke, like many other utilities across the country, is sort of disincentivizing people from moving forward with it on their own, nonetheless investing in it themselves.
Right. Good point. Yeah. Bob, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. You've talked in other contexts about what Duke does in other states. I wonder if they do any of this in other states. Yeah.
This is Anna Chitta. Am I clearer now?
Yeah. Yeah, you're back. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. So to answer your question about other states, it definitely is done very differently in certain states. And I think one of the things that that we have seen be quite effective is when utilities are engaging in their long-term system planning, so their integrated resource plans, they're thinking about, you know, what they might be building in terms of new generation down the line. They're thinking about how energy efficiency might fit into that. There are certain states, such as Massachusetts, where the utilities essentially must consider combined heat and power. And so combined heat and power must be considered on a cost-benefit basis, just like any other generation resource. And utilities in Massachusetts, again, to use that example, they know that if they invest or help encourage combined heat and power systems, they can claim a benefit for those systems within their, they have an alternative energy portfolio standard, which prioritizes combined heat and power and associates a certain, you know, value to that. So there are signals that the Public Utility Commission can send to utilities to say, okay, look, you know, you're going to consider all these different generation resources, consider CHP at the same time. And we're seeing other states do that and think about that in their long-term system planning, which I think is really critical to sort of get that on the horizon for when you're thinking about future capital investments.
Good.
And Anna, do you know if Duke does any of this in other states other than North Carolina?
There are certainly service territories where there have been competing power systems. Prioritizing it as a efficiency resource and developing around it, that we don't really see Duke territories. And one thing that I would say in North Carolina is that a lot of the largest industrial customers are actually, they opt out of the energy efficiency programming in North Carolina. So some of these customers that might be some of the best well-suited for combined heat and power, they're not actually participating in any of the existing energy efficiency programs. So the opportunity for, say, Duke to work with these customers, doesn't even exist right now. And that's just kind of another barrier that is particular to North Carolina and a host of other states as well.
Anna, you had broken up some at the beginning of your answer, but you came back clearer. But to clarify, Duke in other states, we don't know much that Duke is doing with CHP?
There's no dedicated CHP programming in any Duke territories, yeah.
Right, good. Okay, thank you. Are there other questions?
We have a follow-up question from Housley Carr of Platts. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering, I guess if you look at the Denmark map, for example, you see these facilities, a lot of them I understand being smaller, scattered all across the country. It seems as if having CHP across all the various industrial and facilities and schools, community colleges, that type of thing, that there would be a real sort of distributed generation benefit to having these sort of little power plants basically scattered around both the Duke and Progress territories. Could someone comment on that?
I can.
Yeah.
Sure. Again, let me know if I'm breaking up, but one of the best recent examples that we saw was during Hurricane/Superstorm Sandy. If you look at places that made it through with the power on in New York and New Jersey, they were places that had combined heat and power. One of the sort of untold stories, I think, about combined heat and power is its resiliency in the face of, hurricanes, but also, just blackouts and general dips in power quality. I mean, industrial facilities today need very, very high quality power for some of their very advanced machinery. When the power quality dips down that's being provided by the local grid, that can, that can ruin an entire production line for and the products on it. And combined heat and power gives a facility control over that. There are, just lots of redundancy benefits. And then in some cases, as we saw during Hurricane Sandy, CHP systems ended up providing, more power than they typically did so that other facilities could take advantage of that power before the grid came back up. That's a very, very critical component of combined heat and power.
Good point. A quick add-on there is that I understand you can save a lot system-wide in terms of transmission line losses by distributing more of the generation into smaller batches around the area.
Right, and those losses, I think, can go up to almost 7% of the energy we generate is lost in distribution and transmission. So you don't have that with combined heat and power.
Right.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, and I would add to that too. That's part of what we see as an energy future, where you've got more rooftops with solar power and better energy efficiency programs. And okay, are there additional questions?
At this time, there are no additional questions in the queue.
Okay. Anna Chittum, do you have a final thought for us? Or?
I think just, you know, as Anna Moorfield mentioned, we are seeing a pretty substantial sea change. The federal government, for the first time ever, set a national combined heat and power goal. It's a very aggressive goal, but I think it's really important to note that we have one, and we've never really had one before. There's a lot of support at the federal level to help states that are interested in this, and there's a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes policy work going on to help states across the country move towards this goal. So it's a really opportune time to be talking about this in North Carolina.
Good. And with a closing thought, let me just say that it's clear from what we've been hearing here the last 30 minutes that the development of even a fraction of the potential combined heat and power in North Carolina, which would put to use energy that's currently just being wasted, but even a fraction could eliminate the need for new power plants and allow us to start closing fossil fuel plants, again, as part of an overall energy evolution to where we're using clean technologies and prioritizing energy efficiency. So we have so much capacity for CHP in North Carolina. Again, NC Warren is calling on the Utilities Commission in this state to ensure a full and careful consideration of CHP before allowing the utilities to move forward with plans to build any more power plants. So thank you again for participating in our discussion today, Anna Chittum and Anna Moorfield of NC Warren, and thank you, reporters, for listening in, and let us know if we can field any follow-up questions this afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference has now concluded. We thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect your lines.